Yeah, and as always, thanks to Bob Kramer for that terrific music for No Nonsense Nutrition. You know, I was in Austin, not just to go see Austin Live Music, but also to attend the Institute for Functional Medicine's annual symposium. Every year, sometime in May, the Institute for Functional Medicine has their throwdown event, symposium. I've gone to 20 out of the 21 events over the years. And what you have is 3 days of education. Just, I'll use the word barn burner again, like when I was talking about the Bradford Lee Folk Group coming to town. Because that education is just so jammed with information about the future of medicine. You know, changing how we look at medicine, changing the medicine that gets practiced. And of the 20 speakers that were there over the 3 day period of time, one of the ones that I was really taken with, again, I've taken a number of seminars from him, is Michael Ash. Dr. Ash really put together a huge packet of information about the microbiome. And for those of you that are regular listeners of No Nonsense Nutrition, you know it's bacteria are us. And I mean literally bacteria are us. There's way more bacteria on our body, count for count, than there are cells in our body. And so that microbe is very constant, but the host is pretty variable. And what we're learning as we look at the amount of antibiotic resistance that's going on in the world, the amount of antibiotic resistance that's going on even right here in Sarasota, we're starting to understand how critically important maintaining the health of that microbiome is. And not just the microbiome in your gut. You got a microbiome on your skin. You even have a different one on your arms that are dry than in the wet places in your body. You have microbiome in your mouth and your nose and your lungs, even in the vagina. And so when we look at these microbiomes, when we look at these bacteria, what we don't want is mutiny in the microbiome. And because 40% of Americans take antibiotics at least once a year and 70% of children take antibiotics once a year, we need to understand that we're reducing the diversity of these critters that are living in our gut. And these critters are not just there to assist us in digesting food. These critters are there to manufacture various compounds and also for their DNA to talk to the DNA of our body and tell it to upregulate or downregulate inflammation. And so we look at native populations, First Nation populations around the world. And what we find out is that people that live an indigenous lifestyle eat hundreds and even thousands of different plants over the course of the year. But I'll tell you, as a result of being in practice here in Sarasota now 27 years, reading food diaries for an awful long time, I see that Americans eat about the same 25 foods all the time. You know, it's chicken, 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 salmon, 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 broccoli, 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 apples, apples, apples. We don't have as big a variety in our diet. In fact, in some parts of not only westernized society, but industrial nations around the world, as much as 60% of all of their calories come from wheat, corn, and rice. So when we look at these native populations, a couple of things happen. First off, they live with their animals. Now, you say, well, I live with my chihuahua, and I live with my cat, and I live with my parrot, but, you know, sometimes these people are actually living with their farm animals because their farm animals may be the most valuable thing they own. So the pig actually sleeps in the house with the folks. I know, your Uncle Brad is there, too, and that's the pig that's in your house, but, well, you get the drift. We expose ourselves to other bacteria. You know, we know absolutely that people grow up on farms have way less asthma than people who grow up in urban areas. This hygiene hypothesis has really fallen apart. The idea that we need to kill every bug that we can possibly do with, you know, sanitizers and hand cleaners and sprays on the counter, and, well, it's coming back to bite us. So as we begin to understand better about the microbiome, one of the things that we've learned is that there's no single thing that can make a bigger difference in the way that your microbiome works than have more fiber in the diet. Yeah, more fiber in the diet. Because these critters, these bacteria that live in the bowel, interact with the fiber in order to create the compounds that your gut runs on. Your bowel doesn't really run on glucose. You blink your eyes because of glucose. I can talk because of glucose. But our bowel doesn't run on glucose. Our bowel runs on something called short-chain fatty acids, most notably a compound called butyrate. So fiber is the only part of our diet that is essential for our health, and yet it's indigestible. It's made up of the major components of the plant cell walls. Fiber contains insoluble components like cellulose and lignins, which give plant cells their structural integrity. Plus, plants also have soluble fiber like hemicellulose and pectin. So you probably heard of cellulose, you probably heard of pectin, you might not have heard of lignin, you might not have heard of hemicellulose, but things like hemicellulose and pectin form the mortar that holds the fibers of the cellulose and the lignin in place. So just as you think of bricks and mortar, you've got soluble and insoluble working together. Now, there's also little bits of starches that are mixed into these major components of fibers. And even those starches have specific names. I had cooked onion last night when I had my turkey thighs. I cooked onion and celery and some vegetable broth that I cooked my turkey thighs in after I browned them in some olive oil. And the inulin that is in the onion, same as the inulin that's in artichokes, is one of those special starches. It's what we call a prebiotic. It's the very thing that those bacteria like to live on. They have very far-reaching health benefits. I've talked on the air before about the fact that we should change the axiom from an apple a day keeps the doctor away to an onion a day keeps the doctor away, because onions have so many health benefits, but most notably the inulin fiber. Because our digestive enzymes, and remember we make enzymes in the mouth that help to break down starches. They don't break down anything else. Just like when you hand your dog a piece of meat, it goes gulp, gulp. It doesn't go chew, chew. We don't have to use the enzymes in the mouth to work on protein at all. But you need to chew that corn on the cob. You need to chew that piece of toast. You need to chew that potato, because the enzymes in the mouth work fundamentally on starches. We have enzymes in our stomach acid, hydrochloric acid, and pepsin. That works exclusively on protein. Your stomach acid doesn't digest an apple. It doesn't digest a piece of cake. It works on the egg. It works on the pork chop. And then thirdly, we manufacture enzymes from the pancreas. Enzymes to digest protein, enzymes to digest starch, and enzymes to digest fats, proteases, amylases, and lipases. But our digestive enzymes can't break down plant fibers, not into any kind of absorbable components. They pass intact through the small intestine into the colon when they're excreted. So insoluble fiber, just as the name implies, is vital for a really efficient passage through the colon. If it's efficient as those waste products get out of the body, then we have less time to reabsorb toxins. So they get excreted with the waste products of our food. Soluble fiber, on the other hand, even though it's not broken down in the small intestine, it dissolves during digestion and it forms this gelatinous material that, again, helps to move quickly through the large intestine. And those sources of both soluble and insoluble fibers are what we need really for a healthy colon, healthy elimination. I'm still amazed in private consultation when I ask people if they have a bowel movement every day, and the answer should only be yes or no. But in fact, do you have a bowel movement every day? Well, pretty much. Most of the time. Or my favorite answer, every day. Yeah, the body's supposed to take out the trash. And the body's supposed to take out the trash every day. So that soluble and insoluble fiber that adds bulk to soften stools and ensure rapid movement through the large intestine also bonds with DNA damaging chemicals and other toxins so that they don't get absorbed by the body. The soluble fiber is acted on by colonic bacteria in the large intestine, and it's partially broken down into these short chain fatty acids like butyrate that lower blood cholesterol, that slow the rise of blood glucose after eating. So there's other things that fiber does besides help the pooper work good. Those bacteria stimulate antibodies that play a role in immune protection. They increase mineral absorption. They strengthen the colon walls. They inhibit inflammation. They help to stop the formation of polyps. I mean, we got lots of good news here when we're talking about adding fiber. And so the numbers that come from those in the know say women should be eating 25 grams of fiber a day and men should be eating 38 grams of fiber a day. But what's true is the average American's getting 8 to 17. No wonder they sell 700 laxatives in America. There's a lot of people that think dark, hard, and dry is the way it's supposed to be. But that's not the case at all. When we look at the soluble and the insoluble fiber, we want both of them in the diet, and we're going to get the majority of those soluble and insoluble fibers from whole grains, from nuts and hard, crunchy vegetables. All of them are going to have various kinds of fiber. Well, Michael Ash in the seminar of IFM clearly indicated that when we have that adequate amount of fiber in the diet, when we look at these native populations that have these really high fiber diets, as much as 80 to 100 grams of high fiber diets, a lot different from 8 to 17, yeah, they're going to have big bowel movements, that's for sure, but they also have very low rates of the kind of chronic diseases that we see that are, well, trying to bankrupt America, but really trying to bankrupt our health more than anything else. When we look at the nature of getting those fibers in the diet, when we're eating, well, what I grew up on, Wonder Bread, it's a wonder we grew up eating it. The nature of white flour and water, you know, it's designed to make paste. It doesn't have any fiber in it. And since some individuals in my practice, 60% of their calories are coming from wheat and corn and rice. I saw a new client last week, and she has two pieces of toast for breakfast. She eats a sandwich for lunch. She snacks on pretzels in the afternoon. She often has pasta for dinner. She eats cookies or cake or something like that at night. So there were many days where she had eaten flour five times during the day. Every weekend she makes pancakes. So there's lots of flour in the diet. Well, we added up all the flour, all of the carbohydrate calories that she got, and close to 80% of all the carbohydrate calories that she got were nothing more than flour. Very low nutrient content. Very low fiber content. Well, it turns out that this fiber has a conversation with our DNA and with the DNA of the bacteria. And as we're starting to understand that these bacterial environments are very different in individuals, we found out that there's two families of bacteria, Bacteroides and Firmicutes, or Firmicutes. And those two of the four phyla that are found in the gut are the ones that may have a very specific relationship with weight. You heard it. Individuals who have high amounts of the right bacteria stay slender all their life. And people who have low amounts of that same bacteria and high amounts of other bacteria turn around and gain weight easily. Their body becomes incredibly efficient at extracting calories out of their meals. And because they're extracting all these calories out of their meals, what they're getting out of that plate of food and what you're getting out of that plate of food are not exactly the same. It never occurs to most people that if you eat 100 calories of food, you may not digest 100 calories of food. I eat the same 100 calories of food. I may absorb a different amount of calories than you do. Maybe you absorb 97 calories and I absorb 80 because of the environment of the microbiome. So when we tip the Firmicutes over to the Bacteroidetes, you're going to learn more about weight control than you would any other way. And the Bacteroidetes and the Firmicutes, right, see, the more times you hear it, the more familiar it comes. The phylum Bacteroidetes are composed of large classes of bacteria, and they're probably the most studied of all of the bacteria. But what happened is when they began to look at the bacteria that were in people that were, well, critically overweight, people that were even 100 pounds overweight, what they found out was this disproportion of Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes were probably contributing greatly to their obesity. There was past research in the correlation of the gut microbe and diet that demonstrated this complex relationship between these bacteria and the absorption of fatty acids. And that's when they found out that this balance between these two bacteria really made a huge difference in terms of the host, you and me. And so probably over the next couple of years, you're going to end up seeing probiotics that specifically develop an ecology around these two different bacteria so that we can tip the balance. But as Michael Ash clearly showed us at the IFM symposium, we can do it without knowing. We can do it simply by adding fiber. This is the keystone of the First Nation people around the world, is that when we have this high amount of fiber, we get better balance between these bacterias. So how are you going to do it? How are you going to add more fiber to your diet? Well, it's not just a matter of eating a bowl of high fiber cereal. I have a client right now, and she started eating Fiber One or one of those cereals, and she called it nuclear cereal because of the way that it affected her bowel. But again, let's go back and remember that these two families of fibers, soluble and insoluble, both have their own role. And so everybody can go to the drugstore and they can buy a bottle of Metamucil or a bottle of Benefiber or some of these various things, and they may still not really get the results that they're looking for simply because of the fact that they may need more of one than another, more soluble than insoluble. Well, you know darn good and well when you open up a can of beans, and hopefully you're using cans of beans if you're not cooking beans. When you open up a can of beans, that stuff on the top is all slimy. That watery material has gotten slimy because the soluble fiber that is in the beans, which is called guar gum, has dissolved into the water. Well, beans are absolutely one of the most perfect fibers that you can have. Virtually every pea bean that we're talking about, doesn't matter whether it's a black-eyed pea or a lentil, doesn't matter whether it's a navy bean or a garbanzo bean or any of them, because inside the bean is soluble fiber, that's the stuff that made the water slimy, and the outside of the bean is insoluble fiber, the skins. So if I wanted to pick something that had really high fiber, I'd start with something like split peas or lentils, which have 15, 16 grams of fiber in a cup. So when you fix lentil burgers, when you fix split pea soup, you know, the staple of Indian cooking, dal, then you'll be getting more than half of the fiber that's recommended. And again, 25 grams for women and 38 grams for men is really just the beginning if we're talking about having a very healthy bowel. But it doesn't matter whether it's limas or black beans or lentils or split peas. Virtually all of the beans are going to have 13, 15, 16 grams of fiber per cup. One of the best things you can do. I had some blackberries in with my breakfast collection this morning, and blackberries and raspberries are in the top 10 foods that have fiber in them, about 8 grams per cup raw. You know, raspberries really aren't much of a hard sell. They're basically nature's candy. They please virtually every palate. But they put some blackberries on my salad when we went out to dinner on Sunday, and I took them home with me to have with my breakfast this morning. Yes, I had the papaya and the strawberries and a little bit of mango together. But if I want to look for high fiber, I'm going to look for pears. I'm going to look for blackberries and raspberries, because as fruits go, they're going to be up there on the top of the list. Pears, 5 or 6 grams in every pear. And by the way, pears are starting to come in. They've started breeding a pear that comes in a little early. Usually we don't have pears until August, but I actually saw some U.S. pears being sold in the market this week. But the majority of pears right now are coming in from Argentina and South America. You're going to have to wait another month or two. But also remember, pears are especially good for the gallbladder. I had a client that had gallbladder colic this week, and I recommended a weekend of a lot of pear eating. But let's come back to understanding this fiber. Because these substances aren't absorbed in the small intestine and they pass intact into the large intestine, where some of them are broken down by the intestinal bacteria, they're coming from the plant cell walls. Now, you know I talk about your cell wall all the time, because I talk about how you incorporate those omega-3 fatty acids and the alpha-lipoic acid and the CoQ10 and the vitamin E and the astaxanthin, the antioxidant that we find in things like salmon and krill oil. We incorporate those into our cell wall. Well, plants don't do that. Plants incorporate these fibers into their cell wall. That cellulose and lignin that forms solid fibers, like the strings of the celery I had with my turkey thighs last night, they don't dissolve in our watery digestive fluids. But pectins and hemicelluloses do dissolve into their individual molecules, and that's what creates that gum, that mucilage, that gel that helps to keep the stool moist as it transports through the bowel. You know, wheat bran was always considered the preeminent fiber. That's the dry outer coating of the grain. It's a rich source of insoluble cellulose. While oat bran is a rich source of soluble glucan, which is a carbohydrate. In fruits, we get a lot of pectins. If you ever made jelly, you know you add some extra pectin to it. These different fiber components contribute to health in different ways. So that insoluble cellulose, that insoluble lignin, provide bulk to the intestinal contents. And thus, they increase the rate and the ease with which they pass through. So can you see why they would be important if somebody had constipation? So wheat bran was often the thing that people said to use. Well, if you've been constipated for years and now you put in a tablespoon of wheat bran, you're going to hate my guts. Because not only are you going to have enough gas to get to Cincinnati, you could actually create an obstruction. You always start low, go slow. It's a half a teaspoon for the next 3 days, and then it's a teaspoon, and then it's a teaspoon and a half, and on, until we get the results that we're looking for. Again, why do we want this rapid excretion? We don't want diarrhea. We still want formed stool. But we want to minimize our exposure to these DNA-damaging chemicals and other toxins in our food. And the fiber material may bind some of these toxins and prevent them from being absorbed by our cells. whereas soluble fiber components, like that slime in that can of beans, make the intestinal contents thicker. So there is slower mixing and movement of both the nutrients and the toxins. Again, they bind certain chemicals and prevent their absorption. And that's what lowers blood cholesterol and slows the rise of blood sugar after a meal. So we're not just getting the benefit of getting the pooper working good. We're getting the benefit of reducing the toxic load. And so now you're putting in your blackberries, your raspberries, and your pears in your fruit cup. Well, I put some avocado in my salad last night. I had butter, lettuce, little white onion, a beautiful, fabulous tomato, and some avocados. About 7.5 grams of an avocado. So there's just so many good things we can say about avocado. I ought to do a whole show on nothing but avocados. Well, how can you go wrong with adding foods to your diet like beans, berries, and avos? I certainly see those at the top of the chart a lot more than I see something like bran flakes at 7 grams per cup. Oh, my God. Bran flakes. Blah. It's like building material in a bowl. So let's go back to these native populations that are getting 80 to 100, even 120 grams of fiber compared to the 8 to 17 Americans that are getting. Well, what happens is when we assay their bacteria in their stool, they have better balances that help to keep them lean. So what's the first thing that we can get as a result of adding fiber to the diet? We can get weight loss. And you say, well, Eve, I can just go buy Metamucil or Benefiber or wheat bran or something like that and just add that. That's true. You can. But you're going to get a lot more benefit if what we're adding in are the natural foods that contain fibers. You know, when I have an apple with its skin, I've got 6 grams of fiber. So the nature of eating a raw carrot, you know, I've got 3 grams of fiber if I just eat a medium carrot. So by the time I add up all these healthy foods over the course of the day, I'm going to have plenty of fiber in there. I'm not necessarily going to want to use a fiber supplement because I've done it with my diet. Fiber supplements are widely available, whether it's powders or tablets or capsules. But I want you to do it with your diet. I want you to do it by choosing foods that are higher in fiber as opposed to going for the supplement. But where can we see a benefit? We could see a huge benefit in irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease and diverticuli disease and certainly in weight management. When we begin to eat a high-fiber diet on a regular basis, and we get a report card every morning when we go into the bathroom, yeah, you get a report card. When I used that language at a seminar I did recently for doctors up in Minneapolis, one of the docs there said, that's it, that's it, that's what I'm going to tell all my patients. They get a report card every day. Sure you do. You get a report card as to whether what you ate over the last 24 hours has treated you well and treated your bowel well. When we eat poorly, we turn on something called inflammasomes. And yeah, that's a real word. Things that inflame the body. And so because these fibers help our good guy bacteria create a more balanced microbiome, we create an environment that reduces inflammation globally. It doesn't just reduce inflammation in the bowel and things like diverticuli disease or Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome. We reduce the inflammation everywhere in the body. Every single time that we ingest these high-fiber foods and we feed those good bacteria, we have an opportunity to lower our risk of cancer, lower our risk of heart disease, lower our risk of Alzheimer's, lower our risk of other dementias, lower our risk of arthritis, of asthma, of eczema, of psoriasis. Whoa! That's a lot of promise. Well, it turns out that there are some foods that are especially beneficial for that. One of them is Swiss cheese. Who knew? I don't know whether you saw the literature recently that said one of the reasons that the holes in Swiss cheese are not as big as they used to be is they're no longer processing the Swiss cheese in the same place where the hay is kept for the cows. That actually little teeny particles of the hay had gotten into the cheese, and that was one of the things that created the gaps in the Swiss cheese. But there's a specific bacteria that's used to make the Swiss cheese that's actually beneficial for us. So maybe you're going to trade your cheddar for Swiss. I talked last show about the fact that chickpeas feed a particular bacteria. So when you're having that hummus on the celery stick, when you throw those chickpeas onto the salad, you're doing some real good for yourself. When we think about something as simple as cloves, well, cloves, I remember Mom sticking cloves in the ham at Easter time, but cloves aren't something that I usually have in my diet. But when all of the various spices were tested, and they looked at oregano and basil and mint and all of these other spices, cinnamon, even garlic, even peppers, there was nothing that benefited the bowel more than clove. So, no, I haven't figured out how to get clove into my diet yet, but I'm thinking about it. I baked a big squash last night, and maybe a little clove on that mashed squash might taste pretty good. We do know that too much milk fat increases a bacteria that is troublesome for the bowel. So you have to remember that when you're eating too much cheese or too much milk or too much of anything that's got milk fat in it, like butter. There is no single gene that makes your bowel inflamed or not inflamed. It's a collection of these genes that are expressed through these bacteria that make a difference. But when you add avocado to your diet, avocado not only increases your ability to convert beta-carotene into vitamin A. Remember, beta-carotene isn't vitamin A. It's pro-vitamin A. It has to be converted into vitamin A. So eating avocado helps you convert it. Eating avocado helps you absorb beta-carotene. Helps to keep your lungs healthy. Apples, another one. And surprisingly, the best apple isn't the raw apple. The best apple is the stewed apple or the baked apple or the cooked apple, especially if it's got some cinnamon in it. So when you cut that apple up and you put it on the stove with a little bit of water in the bottom of the pot and just sort of simmer it down into a stewed apple and throw some cinnamon on it, you reduce tumor necrosis factor alpha. Oh, yeah, you knew what that was. TNFA, one of the major inflammatory chemicals of the body. When we choose what we eat, we decide what bacteria we feed. You hear that? When we choose what we eat. Now, they got a new burger in town, a burger with a hot dog on top of it. Huh? Excuse me? We're going to put a hot dog on top of a burger? And that's supposed to be good? We choose what we eat. We decide what bacteria we feed. Are we feeding the bacteria that is linked with obesity? It sure seems so. We want these hormone messengers, these DNA talkers that are going to exist on our plate to be doing all good things for us. So you're going to eat better this week. You're going to eat more fiber this week. But, you know, still in all, you're going to wonder, can I do it all with my diet? Do I really have to take supplements? Well, you know, I'm kind of on a vitamin E kick. I'm on a vitamin E kick because it lowers your risk for diseases of aging, including heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's, just like a high-fiber diet does. But this time, it does it by preventing the harmful oxidative damage to every cell in the body. It stops chain reactions that can cause cell damage. And it has this unique ability as vitamin E because it actually gets into the cell wall just like the fish oil does. It acts as a shield. People with high blood levels of vitamin E are 18% less likely to die from any cause, 19% less likely to die of cardiovascular disease, 21% less likely to die of cancer, and 42% less likely to die of lung disease. That's pretty convincing strategy for one single supplement, vitamin E. And it's hard to get enough vitamin E from the diet because we don't eat seeds. We don't eat nuts the way that we did as we were evolving. When I got the munchies yesterday afternoon, I took a handful of pumpkin seeds, pepitas. When you take those pumpkin seeds, put them in a dry fry pan and let them pop open. That's a pepita. Just a tablespoon of those. It's still got some vitamin E in it. Terrific snack. But because we don't get enough of those seeds in our diet now, vitamin E needs to be taken supplementally. You know, if they found vitamin E today, they would have probably taken its 8 different derivations and named them like they did the bees. You know, we've got B1, B2, B3. They've got names, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin. And vitamin E, we would have been good to have E1, E2, E3, all the way up to E8. But in fact, the tocotrienols, which 4 of the compounds of vitamin E fall into, and the tocopherols, which the other 4 of the vitamin E compounds fall into, they were discovered at different times. And so we didn't end up calling them E1 and 2. Now we've done it with K1 and K2 and K4, and we've done it with D2 and D3. But fundamentally, when we look at vitamin E, we see tocopherols or tocotrienols. Tocopherols were the ones we learned about first, and a lot of vitamin E supplements are alpha-tocopherol. We knew that that had the highest activity. But as we've gotten more sophisticated about E, what we know is we need the entire E complex. The entire E complex puts the brakes on aging. So the vitamin E found in most multivitamins, most fortified food, is not full-spectrum vitamin E. If you want to get the full benefits, you need to have all 8 of the vitamin E's in there. Natural vitamin E has always got the letter D in front of it, like D-alpha tocopherol or D-beta tocopherol. Synthetic vitamin E is listed as DL. And the reason that it's listed as DL is because you've got 2 different isomers. You've got 2 different reflections, like looking at yourself in a mirror, only the picture is reversed. These 8 fat-soluble antioxidant members, divided into these 2 groups, tocopherols and tocotrienols, each have 4 different forms, alpha, beta, gamma, delta. You see how much easier it would have been to be 1, 2, 3, 4? Each form has its own biological effect, and all 8 of them work together. So whether we want to keep our skin healthy or our mind sharp or fight infection or reduce the risk of cancers, or do what I think is the most important, which is protecting the heart, you know, this is incredibly useful for helping to prevent heart disease. Vitamin E helps prevent blood platelets from sticking together, so that's a big factor in blood clotting. It stops the oxidation of LDL, what can be harmful. You've heard me say that oxidized LDL is a much greater predictor of heart disease than cholesterol ever dreamed of, a 13-fold better predictor. So when you get your lipid panel done, make sure your doctor tests oxidized LDL. Well, vitamin E will stop the oxidation of LDL. Vitamin E lowers blood pressure by promoting the production of blood vessel relaxing nitric oxide. People whose diets are higher in vitamin E reduce the risk of heart disease by 30 to 50% as compared to people getting low amounts. And this came from the Women's Health Study. It looked at supplemental vitamin E and heart disease. Women aged 65 or older who took 600 IUs of vitamin D, E, every other day for nearly a decade slashed their death rates by 49%. Women aged 45 or older had a 24% drop in deaths from heart disease. That means over 200,000 women a year could be saved just with vitamin E. 500,000 American women die every year of heart disease. 85% of them are 65 and older. And we could change that just with vitamin E? In the Women's Health Study, they found that people who received vitamin E had a 21% reduction in the incidence of harmful blood clots in their veins. Women who had a high risk for blood clots because they'd had one before benefited even more. They had a 44% reduction in their risk just with vitamin E. People with clogging of the neck and the brain arteries who took these full-spectrum vitamin E's, the ones that have all eight of the components in them, saw an improvement in their condition. It not only slowed down the narrowing of the neck arteries, but in 40% of the patients, it appeared to reverse the condition. Diabetics are at very high risk for heart disease, a 400% increase in the rate that heart disease comes on in a diabetic, because it's an inflammatory condition. Reduce the inflammation with the fiber in your diet, and then add the vitamin E. 400 IUs a day of supplemental vitamin E cut the risk of heart attacks, strokes, and related deaths in half in people with diabetes who have the gene marker for diabetes. These people have less than a normal ability to produce natural antioxidants to protect the hemoglobin in their red blood cells from oxidizing. It sounds like a miracle. Well, it acts like a miracle. You know, how much do you need? Which form do you need? The emerging scientific consensus based on the latest research says you want to get an E complex. You want to get all four of the tocotrienols, alpha, beta, delta, gamma. You want to get all four of the tocotrienols, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, in their natural form. Most often these come from sesame seeds or organic soybeans. 400 IUs or greater. 400 of the tocopherols. 400 of the tocotrienols. We measure fat-soluble vitamins in IU, international units. We measure water-soluble vitamins like vitamin B and vitamin C in milligrams. But younger people who don't have special needs, even 100 IUs of tocotrienols and 100 IUs of tocopherols may be enough to consider that you're going to get a significant benefit. So, yes, we want to eat those unrefined cold-pressed vegetable oils, the avocado oil, the walnut oil. We want to eat fresh nuts and seeds and raw nuts and seeds. Remember, when you make a dry roasted nut, you put it in a 600-degree oven. That's just like pizza. It's in a 600-degree oven. Well, when you put cheese in a 600-degree oven, you essentially turn it into a Frisbee. You make it to the point that it's indigestible. When you take those nuts and you put them in a 600-degree oven and dry roast them, you change the oils that are in there. So you don't get these unrefined oils. You get moderated oils. So your best food sources for all of the vitamin E are whole grains, with the germ included, a little bit in fresh dark leafy greens, but more than anything else, nuts and seeds, and cold-pressed vegetable oils. As a kid growing up, wheat germ oil was considered a magic bullet, but you'd have to have more than a cup of wheat germ oil to get 400 IUs of vitamin E. And with the amount of oxidants that we're exposed to just in the air, just breathing the crud that's going to happen when you're stopped at the light, we need that extra vitamin E. We didn't evolve in that environment. You know, we're trying to compensate in that environment. So the only products that contain complete vitamin E family provide these kinds of benefits. You know, we call it the master antioxidant for a reason. When it protects the body from damage from free radicals, you know, making it instrumental in preventing diseases associated with aging, we put the crown on vitamin E. And unlike most vitamins that consist of a single compound, where natural or synthetic really makes very little difference, that's not the case for vitamin E's 8 different compounds. When we look for the real benefit, we're going to make sure that we get a vitamin E complex, because the major human clinical trials that tested selenium and vitamin E in the cancer prevention trial, the heart outcome prevention trial, clearly showed the benefits of using the entire collection of those 8. So look at these two things. They look very divergent, but they're not. One of them is about getting more fiber into your diet. What are you doing to make your immune decisions every day as far as your food is concerned? Remember, every plate of food that you eat is a letter to your genes. Every plate of food that you eat is a letter to your bacteria, to your microbiome. Are we going to dampen persistent inflammation, or are we going to set it on fire? You know, when we eat leafy greens, when we eat millet and quinoa, when we have apples and cloves and cinnamon, when we have chickpeas, when we eat avocados, boy, that's a nice list, isn't it? We know that vitamin A and vitamin D are part of this collection of nutrients that suppress inflammation. And so we still want to make sure that we're getting that high-quality multivitamin, multimineral every day. I had somebody bring in a bottle of multi last week that was from one of the online companies, a well-known company that sells their products online. I also had somebody bring in products that were sold on television on the shopping channel. And what was the difference between those vitamins and the best quality vitamins? It was the raw materials. People still believe that they can buy a $10 a month, you know, bottle of multivitamins and have it be equivalent to a $30 a month bottle of multivitamins. And they're just naive in doing that because the raw materials are cheesy. They're buying down at the very bottom of the barrel, if you will, in terms of the ingredients. And you're not a biochemist. You're not necessarily going to look on that label. Well, after the show, you're going to look on this label and see the difference between D and DL, alpha tocopherol. But you're not going to know always that what they've chosen is cyanocobalamin instead of methylcobalamin. Simple things like that that make a difference in the overall quality. Well, these products that they brought in that came from the online company and that came from the television show were really bottom-end products, and the prices were pretty high. And I was so disappointed because here's a person who's really trying to invest in their health and choose well, and they ended up with mediocre products. So where am I going to ask you to spend your money first? I'm going to ask you to spend your money on the highest quality food you can get your hands on. You can't replace high quality food. And you know, the food industry is really running scared now. Big food is realizing that America's waking up. Not only has McDonald's lost market share, but Coca-Cola's lost market share, and I can list 20 other ones that have lost market share, as people go to what's known in the grocery business as the periphery, all the way around the edge of the store where the meat and the dairy and the vegetables and fruits are. That's the real food. All the stuff in between, you got to wonder how much of that is real food. And they're losing market share, and that's one of the reasons that so many small organic companies and so many small manufacturers have been bought up in the last 3 years, as these large, big food companies, like Campbell's, selling over $8 billion worth of food a year, are buying up these small companies in order to get into that niche market. Because what is grown is local food and organic food. America's wising up. They figured out that the very processing that allowed us to keep from getting poison from food is, in fact, now poisoning us. We want food as it occurs in nature. We want a chicken. We don't want a chicken nugget. We want a potato. We don't want a Pringle. And we want to be able to look at the TV when they come on there with a hamburger with a hot dog on top and say, who are you kidding? What gut microbiome are you feeding with that? What antioxidant do I have to use to neutralize the effect of the free radicals that that burger and hot dog are going to create in my body? You're wising up, like you're wising up. That's one of the reasons that you tune in to No Nonsense Nutrition, so that you can learn more new things about the ways to take better care of your body. And my formula today is vitamin E complex and more fiber in your diet. You know, when you're interested in other subjects, you can always go up on Podomatic and find several hundred of my prior radio shows, Pod-O-Matic, and just type in Eve Plews or Plews News, and you'll come up with all of those dozens and dozens of shows. And that way, if you want to listen to a show just on hearts or just on diabetes or just on peanut butter, there's probably a show on there. But now, WSLR is archiving this show. And so when you go up on WSLR.org, you can now get to archives. And so if you miss a show and you want to hear it right away, because we don't always get around to posting those Podomatic shows right away, you're going to be able to find it here on WSLR Archives. So that is another step forward that your community radio station has made. If you have questions, if you've got suggestions for future shows, don't hesitate to call me here at the end of the show at the station at 894-6469. I'm more than happy to take your suggestions for future shows, because very many ideas for these shows have come from you, the listener. But after you go look at your bottle of vitamins and find out what you're taking, think about going out and getting yourself some E-complex today. Protect your heart. Protect your brain. Protect your future. And make sure when you look at that plate of lunch food that you've got plenty of good fibers in there from vegetables, from whole grains, from nuts, from seeds. If you don't crunch when you chew, you're probably not getting enough fiber in the diet. I'm Eve Prang-Plews. I'm licensed as a nutritional consultator. That's what one of my clients called me this week, a consultator. I'm licensed by the Florida State Board of Medicine, Division of Dietetics and Nutrition, as a nutrition counselor, and I hold the certified practitioner title from the Institute for Functional Medicine. There's now about 400 of us CPs here in the United States. Another class has graduated. I had the privilege of being in the first 124 people who received the certified practitioner acknowledgement. And so if you're ever looking for somebody doing this kind of work, you can always go up on the Institute for Functional Medicine website and look for the people who are graduates or have been awarded the CP, or who have at least taken the applied functional medicine and clinical practice training, because